this little stream in the background here is the stream that runs from the front of Matt Moore's house right down by the gable of Dan Foley's house, a very short distance of about 20-30 yards. This is the stream where the body of Matt Moore was concealed and eventually discovered all those years ago. So it is a significant stream and a lot of history attached to it, in that it changed the life of many of a number of people. Dan Foley, who was portrayed as the murderer of Matt Moore. So it is a significant little place, a little stream.
Dan Foley collapsed and died of a seizure in a field. His body was found on the marshy land he had farmed for over 50 years, not far from a deep ravine. That was 1963. It was in this ravine that 5 years earlier, the body of Matt Moore had been found. Moore, a 50-year-old local farmer, had been murdered and his body hidden there. Due to a long-standing feud with Moore, Foley was the only suspect. But when the guards didn't charge Dan Foley, the locals took the law into their own hands. From these events, John B. Keane was to immortalise Dan Foley as the Bull McCabe.
So that you can imagine that a family who cherishes a special field will go to any lengths to hold on to it. And if you come to try to take that field, they believe that they're entitled to go to any lengths to defend it. And they won't stop short of murder in some sad instances.
He did not murder Matt Moore. There was no reason for him to murder Matt Moore. The court case was pending and he was quite clear in his mind that he owned the land and there was no question about it. So, in effect, there was no reason for or cause for him to murder Matt Moore.
The Limerick actor Richard Harris has been nominated for a Best Actor Oscar for his performance as the Bull McCabe in Jim Sheridan's adaptation of The Field. Harris is nominated alongside Robert De Niro and Jeremy Irons and will discover if he is to receive an award at the March 31st ceremony, which will take place at the Shrine Civic Auditorium in Los Angeles.
And then you have the Oscars in Los Angeles just around, you know, at the time of the movie. And it's absolutely incredible that, like, that a murderer committed in the most remote part of North Kerry, the most remote part of Ireland, up in literally in the middle of a bog, should reverberate all around the world from Russia to LA, you know. And at the time, neither country was even talking to each other. But they both showed a huge interest in the field, and, you know, Glasnost hadn't even come in then. So it's surreal, and it's absolutely incredible the way it happened.
In terms of distance from Tralee, it was remote. It was mountainy, rushy. There was very little development. I mean, there had been no new houses there. Anybody who was living there had been living there for years. And most of the people were either small farmers or some of them were working in town.
Rimmo was a very isolated area. The road was exceptionally bad. The road led from, it was a back road from Tralee to Nagashua, but no cars would travel it, even though it was much shorter. There were deep ruts in the road. It had no tarred surface. And the community, the infrastructure was poor, and the economic aspect of it was also very poor. They would have had three or four cows in each house, and they would have turf and commonage, which was basically more turf, and they would have had trouble eking out a living. They would have dole in the winter time as well.
A gentle stream trickling across a narrow road, about three quarters of a mile from Raymore Cross, marks the spot where Dan Foley's house used to stand. Across the infamous field is what remains of Moore's home. The cottage's roof fell in decades ago, but its walls stand strong. The two houses are interconnected. To get to Moore's home, you must first go to Foley's. Their names, like their homes, will inextricably be linked forever. Moore for being murdered, and Foley for being the suspect.
Well, life has been devalued in the intervening years. Murder in my younger days, and I'm talking about maybe the 40s and 50s, murder was a huge thing. It was something that wasn't a regular occurrence. And so it captured not alone just local headlines, but national news headlines. And the Moss Moore murder was obviously captured in the national news headlines for the reason, number one, that initially the body wasn't found, and number two, the incidents that happened around it. First of all, the daubing of this boycott sign on the local creamery. I mean, that was electrifying at the time.
The critics at the time were demanding him to go a bit more modern in his writing and write about everyday affairs in a modern lifestyle. So he did, and it was driving him cracked. He thought he didn't like it. So he was very upset, and it was this Morris Moore affair was coming with him all the time, and it was all the time there. So Brendan Kennedy said, "Look, go back." He said, "To your roots, go back to the earth," and that's when he started to write The Field.
Back in 1958, when the murder occurred, my father went up to the murder scene with an English journalist by the name of Michael Whale. And my dad brought him up, and they went up and they wanted to see Dan Foley, but Dan Foley wouldn't see them, even though I think he treated them with courtesy. He wouldn't talk to them, and they just went away. But it had a huge effect on him, because you've got to remember, back that time there were so few murders. I mean, every two or three days now, I know it sounds terrible to say you have a murder, and it doesn't have the same impact on the population at large. It's probably a sad thing, but that's what it was back then. So it had a huge effect on him, you know. And he'd just written Saive, and that came out around the same time. It was the start of the whole breakthrough for him. And I'd say he always had it in his head, I'm going to write about this someday. And of course he did, obviously, then, when he wrote The Field.
He researched it to the very end. For the Dan Perry end, he had all the people from around life. He would have them in at different times, different nights, and talking to them about Dan Perry Endy and their different opinions of him, and he got the whole picture straight. But for The Field, he didn't speak to anyone about it.
Well, I would say he's real, but he's based on no one particular individual. Particularly, he's not based totally on Dan Foley. The murder is there, obviously, and the whole thing, and the fact that Dan was a suspect. But no, the Bull McKay would have been a composite character based on the type of people that were coming into the pub. I'd say a lot of them at the time, and you know, there's stories going back in those days of fellas coming in wanting to wreck the place and fight. It was a lot rougher than the civilized place that we're recording in now. I hope.
There's loads of Bull McCabes. I haven't seen a bull now for a while, but here in the bar, a Bull McCabe walks in the door with his son Ty quite often. And maybe a year or two before John died, I went upstairs to him and I said, "John," I said, "there's a Bull McCabe in the bar at the moment." And very, very often I see a Bull McCabes. If you went to a fair now or a mart, you could see them, you know. And you would see him dressed like he had the Bull McCabe dressed, with the big stick and as well. But I didn't see one now for a while. They must be dying out.
John B. Keane's The Field played all over the globe, but the origins of the play and the story of Dan Foley and Moss Moore begins in Raymore, County Kerry, in the 1950s, at a time when they were close friends.
Then Foley and Moss Moore were close neighbours. They cooperated with the saving of the hay, the saving of the turf. Any little emergencies they might have, they helped one another. Moss Moore regularly had tea in Foley's house. He often had his dinner, and they were very close in every way.
Moore was a very small fellow, weighing about 10 stone, and Foley was very broad-shouldered, a burly lad. You could imagine him carrying great weights on his shoulder. They were totally different. He was between 55 and 60 and very strong. Moore would have been just a little wisp of a fellow, really.
Then the spring came, and dear master, I led quite a bit of turf with us. I gave a bag of turf with us. And, yes, I put me on my bicycle out of Raymore, and myself, and Moss, and Dan Foley, cut the turf. They were so friendly then. We cut Pat Cavendish today, Moss Moore tomorrow, and Dan Foley the day after. And we spent a few more days cutting. We wouldn't cut the turf one day.
And what was it like being in the company, working with these two men for a couple of days? Were they a good crack to hang around with? Were they good company?
They were great company, indeed. They were very good company. And as you know, Mas was not married. He lived alone. And when we come home in the evening, Mrs. Foley would have the dinner ready for us. And everything was lovely. They decided to build a boundary fence on the moorland between the two of them. Marshy ground on which the snipe wouldn't stay in the winter time. Oh, terrible land. It wasn't worth a trineen, as we say in Irish.
The piece of ground that was disputed by Dan Foley and Moss Moore is just right across the stream from us here. A very small little strip of ground, it would be no more than a half an acre in area. It's a piece of ground adjoining Moss Moore's land and Foley's as well. So the areas was in those days sort of open, and maybe there was no really real boundary or no fence marking the boundary, but Dan Foley naturally understood it was his land, and as was proven in later years, it was his land, and Moss Moore thought it was his ground, so that's how the dispute started. And
disputed over a boundary, Bones Ditch, and they agreed to, Foley was to start the fence and he was to start here. That agreed with his solicitor in Tralee, and Foley was to start there, and he went back here a few feet on it, wasn't worth talking about. He went back into Moore's, he started there.
There was a court case planned where it was to be decided. But of course, you had the other element then where locals sort of played on Moss Moore, and they sort of blew it into the proportion that it was not. It was.
Well, when the court, there was a court case. There was a court case going to be coming up, you know. And I said it to Dan Foley. I said, it's only a waste of money, I said. It'll cost someone money. And he said, there'll only be one man around for that court case, he said. And he said, you see down the parish, he said, there were two neighbours always arguing there. He said, there's green grass around the two doors there today. He said, and it won't be long until there's green grass around the two doors all.
I was dealing with petty crime here in town at the time. And I was dealing with petty crime, little hair indeed. But anyway, a phone call comes to the station this particular day, looking for Pat Cavendish. And as it just happened, I happened to be in the station interviewing a young boy, yes, for some petty crime. And yes, Moss Moore on the phone from the post office in Queldove, there. Not so far from Raymore, on the Tralee side of Raymore. That post office is not there today. Pat Dan Foley is tormenting me. Would you come out to me, please? I'd like to have a talk with you. I wrote to that effect. Yes, Mas, I will call to see you. I was so bloody busy with dealing with young lads. The day slipped. And the next thing, three men from Raymore arrived into the guard station, reporting that Mas Moore was missing for the past 2 days.
Yeah, he said he was watched at night. We got playing cards down to Collins's, Mas Moore and myself. And he said he'd over now with a flashlight watching me, but I'd go a different way tonight, he said. You know?
Mas Moore was down at a house playing, I think it was Collins's house, playing cards, and it was a weekly card school. He left about 10:30, I think, to go to his home, and he'd been wearing a cap, an overcoat, carrying a stick and a bicycle lamp, and he wasn't seen after that.
We were playing cards in Julia Collins's house, and then Teddy Shukra walked him as far as the cross near his home and said goodnight to him, and that was about 10:20 that night. And Mas Moore wasn't seen anymore after that, not alive. So what happened between there and subsequent is all a matter of history or non-history, if you like. Mas Moore told his friends when he was out playing cards at night that he felt he was being watched at night. And I think that the inference was pretty clear that it was his neighbour, Dan Foley, who was watching him. So when the people of Raymore went to the barracks to report Mas Moore missing, they were reporting a murder, which was an extraordinary thing because there was nobody knew what had happened, and nobody, in truth, still knows what happened then, because there were no witnesses.
Oh, I knew very well. I knew very well what had happened when he was missing, when Mas Moore was missing. I knew very well what had happened. I went over. The morning before Moore was missing, I think it was a Friday morning, was it? I'm not sure now. But the day before that, I met Dan Foley and his wife going to town on the bunny trap, and he'd lift a split. And I asked him what happened to his lip, and he said he got a buck from a cow. Well, I don't know, it could happen, of course, that a cow would split your lip, but, you know, I doubt it.
Sure.
I went to Moore's first, and there was no trace of anything. So I went down to Foley's, and I met Mrs. Foley, and I asked her, "Now, did I see you?" Mas Moore, and she said, "No." I said, "He's missing. He's in the ground. The pigs are hungry about certain things." And she said, he might be gone up the country working," she said. I said, How would he leave his cattle, his two cattle, his two cows, and his two pigs there and go away up the country working without telling someone?" So that was that then. We went to Moore's brother then, and we told him, and we went to the guards' barracks, and I told the guards when I went in, we were talking to inside to the guards, and I said, "You're looking for a dead man." And I wanted to know, how did I know that you were dead? And I said, "I know he did it." You know?
There was a Sergeant Mitchell in the day room. I am busy, means today, and Sergeant Mitchell will go out along with you. "Oh no, Pat," they said, "you'll have to come along with yourself." And yes, I went out to Raymore with them in the vehicle.
Sure. You first of all called up to Mas Moore's house. What scene did you discover there?
The stable and the door was pulled, lock gone. A few things disturbed in the house, giving the impression that there was a house breaking. that it was a house breaking. Yes. And then I called down to Dan Foley. I had a conversation with him. What do you think happened, Mas Moore? And his answer to me was, Pat, don't you know, didn't you know, that Dan Foley, that Mas Moore, was a very weak person, and that he probably fell into some buckhole.
But you knew Mas Moore.
I knew Mas Moore to be hardy, little man,
not
delicate.
He wouldn't fall into a bog hole.
He wouldn't fall into a bog hole, a place that he knew that could travel with his eyes closed.
Garthy and Kerry have widened the search for the missing farmer Morris Moore, who was last seen over a week ago on his way home after playing cards. Neighbours claim the 50-year-old farmer may have been murdered in a land dispute. Garthy and local volunteers searched the bog surrounding Mr Moore's farm in Raymore, but so far have recovered nothing.
He went missing on the 6th of November, and it was 8 or 9 days later that the body was found. Within, I'd say, 50 yards of Mas Moore's house. And that was the extraordinary result, because it was generally assumed that, it was reasonable to assume that, the search for Mas Moore would have started at his house. And as it happened, the search went over the mountains, I mean, from miles from his home. And people joined in the search, and of course people trampled all over the site where eventually the body was found. So there wasn't a prayer of getting any footprints or anything like that.
Garthy have confirmed that the body recovered yesterday in Raymore in County Kerry is that of missing farmer Mas Moore. Garthy stated the 50-year-old farmer, who had been missing for 10 days, was strangled and his body hidden in a ravine 20 yards from his house. Garthy say they are following a definite line of inquiry.
Over 12 years, the country had 54 murders. That was information given by the Minister for Justice in the Dáil. And of the 54, the police had scored great success in solving 52 of them. So there were only 2 unsolved murders in 12 years.
It was very dramatic. People were coming from all sorts of places, far away as Cork, Limerick, and further afield. You had a whole team of journalists, of guards, and people investigating the crime. It was a huge event at the time, not like nowadays. Of course, murder is not treated in the same thing, but then it was huge. You had throngs of people, continuous people there, cars in those days, of course, were not very numerous, but the place, you couldn't park a car, or you couldn't get in and out of the place with traffic.
He was at Mossy Moore's murder himself, at his burial, and knelt at the graveside. I remember Chief Superintendent Lawler, head of the murder squad at the time, saying it was the first time he ever saw a chief suspect's photograph kneeling at the grave of the victim. It quite amused him.
A man who had great regard for Mas Moore brought his gun to a graveyard, but his neighbour advised him to put the gun away.
Some believed the discovery of the body in the ravine was confirmation that only Dan Foley could have murdered Mas Moore. Others saw the discovery of the body in the ravine as proof of Foley's innocence, as he drank water from the stream.
Well, I think it was generally accepted at the time that the murder took place where the body was hidden. That Mas Moore went home. He had he had a choice of going home two ways. One was a muddy, uncontroversial way. The other was a drier. It was a high ditch, but it was a controversial way. It was a long way down for his house. So I remember it was conjectured at the time that Mas taunting Dan Foley, and that he decided to go home this way and give Dan Foley the two fingers. But Dan, that's where they met, and of course there was no contest. There would have been no contest if Dan Foley was the person. There would have been no contest between Moss Moore and Dan Foley, because Moss Moore was a bit of a weakling. There would have been no fight in him at all. He was very thin, and compared with Dan Foley, who was a powerful barrel-chested man.
The finding of the cap directly on the bushes, directly over the body, when it was discovered, that, if you're taking it on its own, Dan Foley was under surveillance for 24 hours. He couldn't go into the toilet without being observed, nor any member of the household couldn't do anything. How the cap appeared there at that particular time, it hadn't been there previously during the search of the time that the Moss Moore was missing, because people were walking along that particular place continuously, a stream of people, and somebody would have seen the cap. But the cap suddenly appeared in this position over the body on the Saturday evening. So, like, that alone, if you take that alone, how could Dan Foley put the cap there? How would Dan Foley continue to use the water from the stream for drinking purposes? It was their only source of water. And knowing that there was a body inside of it, inside in the stream, I don't think any human being would drink water knowing that there was a dead body inside in it. So if you take that, those are only one or two instances of why one would come to the conclusion that Dan Foley was innocent.
Well, sometime in December, this has gone on for a long time, because I'd been ordered by the Irish press to stay there for 3 weeks every day in case there's an arrest or any activity happening. And sometime after that, I was downtown, and a detective who was on the case, Donnie Collins, came to me and questioned me about having tea in the house. And I said, "So what?" And he said, "Well, do you know where the water came from?" I said, "No." He said, "It came from the drain where the body was when you were drinking it." And I said, "I didn't mind about that the water was boiled anyway."
The pub was let be. Yes, they went to the house to arrest him. And Dan Foley said, "I'll go in my pony and trap," he says, "to the station." Which he did. And came home again, taking his pony and trap.
You yourself put the allegations to Dan Foley that he may have murdered
Massey Moore. I did. I told him what they were saying, that they're alleging that he murdered Massey Moore, and his reply is always the same: them going to court and swear their perjury. Yeah. But he never said anything against Massey Moore or favour him, and wasn't inclined to discuss it in depth.
And has it made sense to you, that kind of statement?
As Dan Foley is one of the most was one of the most independent-minded Kerry men I've met. That you meet these quite often around, and they're a distinctive breed of people. And his reply to me, "Let him go into court and swear their perjury," was what I would say typical, and I would expect it of him.
He believed that the events between himself and the dispute between himself and Moss Moore was used by others for their own purposes, and the whole thing went wrong, and Moss Moore had to be silenced. That would be saying it in without naming names or people or involving oneself. He was framed, and that was the total picture, a framing of Dan Foley, for the betterment of others who had a huge requirement for cash at the time. And as I said before, I firmly believe, and I would be almost 100% sure, that Moss Moore did have substantial money hidden away in the house or in on his possession, and the only way that money could have been got was to murder Moss Moore, and that's exactly how it happened, a total framing.
There was never to be an arrest. Foley's family blamed the police for not catching the real murderer, Locals blamed the police for not catching Foley.
Insufficient evidence to prosecute, that was written on the file. And I think the police, the Gardaí at the time, were gobsmacked because they felt that it was more or less an open and shut case. Now, I don't know on what basis they made that decision, but again, going back to a credible alternative. I mean, all the circumstantial evidence was very strong that Dan Foley was the murderer. But again, there was nothing to connect. There was nobody, no witness to put him on the site of the murder.
As a guard yourself, and have you worked with some of the guys that came down for him, Kerry, why do you think Dan Foley was never prosecuted?
Because there wasn't no evidence against him, no concrete evidence against him. Because I was lonely at night time indeed. Nobody stirring, everybody in bed, and nobody heard anything, nobody saw anything. And the poor people had no evidence for us. And there was no DNA on those, just as you know.
When the body was found, the police activity ended and they took a weekend off, the special branch people. One was recalled to the scene, but they held the crime scene, if it was his house, wasn't protected. And his nephews and the neighbours held a wake in the house on the Sunday night. And on Monday morning, the police arrived and then protect the house and fingerprint the house. But the wake had already been held there, so they had missed the bus, even though they were there for 10 days.
There was suspicion all the time. And if Dan Foley was charged and found innocent, it would have cleared the air. But this thing was in the air for years afterwards. And, you know, there were shots being fired at his house, and there was a bomb went off in a ditch opposite his house. That created an atmosphere in the Raymore area at the time.
Yeah, he was continuously under the eyes of somebody. There were people, if there weren't police or guards, there was somebody looking through the window or watching him doing whatever he had to do. His whole life became sort of a circus for people to look at or to draw their own amusements or whatever, or why they should be concerned with what Dan Foley done. I don't know, but his whole life was turned upside down. He was put under huge pressure by the locals. They boycotted him, and his milk was refused at the creamery. He couldn't sell stock or couldn't buy feed for stock or anything like that. And there were different attempts at his life, if you like. There were shots fired through the window of his house. There was a bomb placed in the ditch outside his house. You know, one would wonder at the purpose of all of it.
That was an incredible sentence for anybody to impose, but that was the way it was, and that was obviously the Moss Moor had won the sympathy of the people, and his neighbours and friends, and I suppose they were the motivators of the whole campaign of boycott.
And the reaction was, 'tis a pity they didn't kill him.
That was
out straight, that was the reaction. Yeah. 'Tis a pity they didn't kill him, which let it be two murders then.
Dan Foley himself told me that that one day I met him on the road near his house. He says, I didn't do that murder. I didn't kill Moss Moor. And if he didn't, you'd have to have huge sympathy for him because of the nature of the hostility which he had to endure, and his wife had to endure in his lifetime, that part of his lifetime.
He didn't recover. He had a very lonesome life. He lived with his brother Michael in the house and his wife Nora. They lived in isolation, if you like, and they just had to carry on as best they could. it had definitely a bad effect on him, and I would believe that it led to his early death.
Dan Foley, the prime suspect in the murder of Maurice Moore, collapsed and died today on his Kerry farm. He was 63 years of age. Mr. Foley died while tending land not far from where the murdered body of Maurice Moore was recovered in 1958. He is not to be buried locally.
As I have told you, Dan Foley was his own, and he was cut away from the people. He had arranged, he must have, of course, arranged everything in regard to his death. And the people were surprised that he was not buried in Raymore, in O'Brien graveyard, where all his ancestors are lying today. But instead of that, he is buried below in Raw in Tralee in a new graveyard of his own. Yes, people were surprised at that.
Why do you think your uncle buried Dan Foley in Tralee? What do you think his reasoning was? Because you did have a family plot out there.
I suppose because of the general feeling in the area and the boycott and that. I suppose maybe they wanted to remove the funeral and the whole thing from the area and take it into Tralee. I don't know. As I said, I was young at the time and I had no say or maybe opinions about it at the time. But things have changed since then. And of course I have my own views now on that he should have been buried in O'Brien.
Nora Foley died in 1981 after living over a decade and a half on the side of a mountain alone. Her death meant both Dan Foley and Moss Moore's homes were unoccupied.
The Moss Moore's house, I'm standing right in front of it across the stream. Nothing remains, only the walls, the gables sticking up. It is about less than 50 yards directly at the back of Dan Foley's house. Nothing remains of Dan Foley's house now except the kitchen floor can be, you know, you can see the area of the kitchen floor, the concrete and that, but all the walls have been demolished and the whole area has changed totally. I love to visit this place and come up here all the time. I bought it after my uncle's my uncle's wife died, and she naturally owned the place, and she left it to her niece. Her niece sold it, and I bought it sometime later. And I own the land now, and I come up here quite often. I like to visit here. It's very quiet, very remote, very peaceful area. There's very little happens here. You rarely see anybody when you come here. It's amazing, and all the activity that went on here. There was kids and music and dancing. There was it was a very happy area at one time, but all that has passed.
The field ends with the Bull McCabe saying that he'll remember the murder long after it's been forgotten. And in a way, whether he was innocent or guilty, Dan Foley suffered the same fate. Living in isolation with Moss Moore's empty cottage behind him and the grass growing green around it.
The grass won't be green on his grave before he's forgot by all. By all except me.
The disputed field is still there. In the late 90s, Caolte, the Irish Forestry Board, determined the disputed land actually belonged to the Foley estate. But by then, Moss Moore and Dan Foley were dead over 35 years, and the field they had fought over had become overgrown with briars, reeds and heather.